Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Devin McCoy, and this is the Dirt Bike Journals. Welcome back, everyone. For those of you that are new, the Dirt Bike Journals is a podcast for dirt bikers by dirt bikers. And here we share stories about our dirt bikes. So if you have a story or anything about dirt bikes you'd like to share with me, please reach out through Instagram or Facebook. You can also send an email to thedirtbikejournals@gmail.com. Now, let's listen to today's guest.
Well, we're up and rolling now, so we can go ahead and get started. Travis, thanks for coming on Dirt Bike Journals and taking a minute. I know it's a lot to kind of put stuff into your schedule when you're already busy enough. So thanks for taking a little bit of time.
It's fun. Try something new.
Yeah. Anyway, for the listeners, I am here with Travis Rasmussen at Power Chicken Off-Road, and we are going to chat about his life, dirt bikes, and basically how motorcycles have influenced your life and what you do. And so let's start out with who you are, where you're from, and how you got started here.
Okay. Well, Travis Rasmussen, I grew up in Logan area, Utah. Just living here in Heber. Been here for about 3 years now. I've been loving that. I've loved dirt bikes since I was a little kid. Got my first bike as a teenager. First bike I rode was XR250L.
What year?
I believe it was a 78.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Old school. Real old school.
Old school heavy, especially for a little 13-year-old.
Oh, shoot, 13.
So,
is this, you were talking about, this is the one that your grandpa had?
Yeah.
It was just sitting in the shed forever?
On the farm, it was just sitting there forever and never see him ridden it, and yeah, was able to get that from him. It wasn't too long after I got that that my dad said, let me take that and I'll get a different bike for you. So
he wanted it?
So, yeah, my grandpa got it brand new. When my dad was a kid on the farm, mm-hmm. and so my dad, as he was, you know, grew up working on the ranch in Montana, he would ride that as a kid.
Okay, and cool.
So
it's a little nostalgic value there.
Yeah, it kind of came full circle for him there.
That's cool.
He actually still has it.
Really?
So
is your dad still live up in Logan?
So yeah, he's still up there.
Okay.
So my dad ended up getting that for him, and then he got a little DT175. Me and a little 125 for my brother.
Yeah, that's the Yamaha, so, right? Yeah. Yamaha TT.
Yep.
Okay.
So those were, I think, like 81.
Okay.
So another some more old school bikes.
Still, Yamaha builds a great machine, just like Honda. So
those things honestly went through so much, and I'm surprised they did as well as they did with what me and my brother put them through. So.
Yeah. Just riding around up in Logan area, and
yeah, so we did a lot of dirt road riding. That kind of became kind of the thing, you know, some single track, nothing too crazy technical.
Yeah.
But we do like overnight campouts.
Oh, cool. Just like pack all your stuff on your back or on the fender and go.
Yeah, backpack and just take off for the weekend.
Shoot, that sounds so cool.
And it was a lot of fun.
This is when you're still in your teens.
Yeah, so still in my teens.
That sounds like a great childhood.
Yeah. I remember one time we went camping up just below Logan Peak.
Okay.
And July 31st, actually, remember. Should be hot middle of summer. We got snowed on that night.
You're kidding.
No. Ugh. We got snowed on. So, sleep was a difficult challenge then, but...
Did you have a tent with you? You guys were
so we had tarps and sleeping bag.
Oh, shoot.
Packing light. You can't pack everything
right
on the bike. So, got up in the morning, like 5 o'clock, right? Okay, it was enough of trying to sleep.
Oh.
Let's get some warm food in us and get back on the trail. And the trail was like a clay. So, two little teenagers still learning to ride, and we're riding in clay and snow and freezing our tails off.
That's a way to cut your teeth. Jeez.
Yeah. And we had two options. We can either go down the one trail that's all clay. It's a little bit longer, but not as steep. Or we can go down a second trail that was, you know, twice as steep. For anyone that knows the Providence Canyon area, we've been coming down that, where it's basically the trail's all boulder.
Oh, geez.
So we can go down that in the rain and snow, or go down the clay. And we decided to go down the Providence, the Rocky Boulder stuff.
Shoot,
it's a little bit shorter of a ride.
Okay.
We're still learning.
Lesser of two evils.
Yeah, so we're still learning how to ride at that point, my brother and I. And I know there's no way I'll ever know how many times I stalled going through those rocks and everything.
Yeah.
And about halfway down, two riders came up on their dirt bikes going up the trail. And nice new bikes and all geared out and everything.
Of course.
They cruise on out by us, and we can hear them for a while, and we can actually, I think, hear them when they get to the top of Logan Peak buzzing around. Like, we can't see it because it's a blizzard up there.
Yeah.
And we can still hear, brat, brat. And then a little while later, we see them again. They're coming down. They got snow on their shoulders and top of their helmets, but like, they've been all the way up, and now they're coming back down, passing us, and we're still working our way. It's just one of those moments where, like, I want to be like that someday.
Yeah. I totally get that feeling.
A lot of fun there. Come a long way since then, thankfully.
Yeah, what year would that have been?
Oh, heck. Let's see. 30 now, so I don't know.
So what are we at?
I'm not the math. I don't want to do that on the fly, but yeah.
So it would have been
2006, 2008, maybe?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Man.
But, so yeah, that's some of the early memories there, dealing with all that. Just kind of riding around, cruising with my dad. Really enjoyed that. A bunch of my uncles would ride dirt bikes, and they've been doing that their whole lives.
Okay.
And so was a tag along a lot with them.
Yeah.
Some fun memories there. I really appreciate their patience and helping me with stuff and just going at a slower pace so I can keep up with them.
Yeah, that's something to be appreciated.
It's really a big thing, and that's something I really appreciate about, like, a lot of the dirt bike community in general.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of great people out there, and they understand we all start somewhere.
So. Yeah. I've made comments about that earlier in some of my other episodes, that the dirt bike community itself, and this kind of goes across all different aspects and disciplines of motorsport, but they're always there to help, mm-hmm. and they're totally understanding of where you're at, because, yeah, like you said, they've been there. They get it. So where did you mostly ride? Like, with your uncles and stuff, where do you like to ride now?
Now I ride a lot up Lake Creek and towards, so that's just like east of Heber and up towards Woodland
area. Okay. Yeah.
So that's kind of like my backyard right now.
Nice.
So I get out and play there as much as I can.
Mm-hmm.
I need to explore a lot more areas around here, but where that one's so close. And
yeah, Sam Bennion introduced that to me this last year, and it's so cool up there.
It is.
Man. Lots of logs.
Some areas, yes, there's lots. So that's kind of where I'm mostly at now. I grew up, like I said, doing a lot of stuff up in Logan Cache Valley area. Mm-hmm. So Logan Canyon, Blacksmith Fork.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So Blacksmith Fork and all those places over there. Did a bit of riding up by above Lava Hot Springs.
Okay.
So I did some up there with my uncles. They actually, we had a memorable ride when I was still learning. We went around Pebble Mountain. There's a ski resort up there.
Okay.
And it's pretty steep, and so that whole mountain, there's like a loop that you can do around it. There's, I think, five of us that started out, and we go up and over. And going down the mountain, the trail is following like an old like riverbed. And one of my uncles hit a rock and it just rolled sideways and basically like slammed the bike sideways and his leg got pinned between one of those big river boulders and the bike.
Ouch.
And it broke his brake lever too. The same. And they're like, great, we're on some of the steepest terrain out there and no brake.
Yeah. Oh,
so we're like, well, heck, what are we going to do there? Luckily, there's kind of a cutoff chute partway through that trail, and it goes down to the town and where my uncle actually lived. So him and one of my other uncles decided once we get to that, we'll just cut off and go down there, go home, see if we need to actually go to the hospital or not.
Oh.
Because it swelled up to like a soft, his leg, like a shin.
Lower okay.
The leg, there's like, looked like a softball was underneath his jeans.
Whoa.
There, and I was like, oh.
That's kind of, yeah, like swelling in the middle of your leg there.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So those guys they veered off, and then me and two of my other uncles kept going, and you know, they're on XR 500, 400, and I'm on my little DT 175 still.
Wait for me, I'm coming.
Yeah,
no shoot.
Joke. No joke. Yeah, exactly how it was. But at one point where there's kind of like an avalanche chute that's going across the trail where it's all really just loose, just kind of gravelly stuff.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And the point that had the least amount of loose gravel was also the side that was closest to the downhill slope.
Yeah. And I was like, always works out that way.
Jeez. So kind of crossed it. I get about 3/4 of the way across it, and then my back wheel slips off the edge. And I just remember, like, super vividly just, like, holding onto my handlebars and trying to, like, brace that one leg against the trail.
Okay, so backing up a little bit.
Yeah.
So your back tire falls off the edge. You just grip onto the handlebars, and what happens?
Hold onto the handlebars until they're, like, level with the trail, and I can't hold on anymore unless I want to go down the slope with the thing. So I let go and end up just sitting there on the edge of the trail, just watching the bike slide down this slope.
No.
Kind of avalanche stuff with all the gravel pebbles and whatnot. And just thinking, like, crap, how in the heck am I going to get this back up?
Mm-hmm. Were your uncles out in front of you?
One of them was. The other one was not too far behind me. So by the time the bike stops sliding, he comes up and is like, sees me sitting there on the trail.
Why'd you put your bike down there?
He looks and sees the bike down. He's like, oh, heck.
Dang, how far down?
Probably like 30 or 40 feet. But
whoa.
Luckily, it's just like just gravel and didn't like bounce. It just
right.
Yeah. And so it's a pretty steep slope.
Yikes.
And so he's like, okay, well, I'm going to go up to my other uncle, catch up to him.
Good luck.
Have him come back to me.
Yeah.
Come back to where the bike is, and we'll figure it out. So get all regrouped, slide down to the bike where it's at, and turn off the fuel first thing, or whatever, and kind of hold on to it, make sure it doesn't go any farther.
Right.
But we get a bunch of tie downs and kind of hook them together, and there's a little tree like halfway up, so get someone up to there, kind of holding onto the tree to kind of anchor yourself.
Yeah,
and pull, and then another person or the other people at the bike trying to push it up.
Yeah.
And it, I don't know how long it took, but eventually we got it back up onto the trail.
Oh my gosh.
The shifter had gotten wrapped around the foot peg.
No way.
So right. Well, let's see what we can do. Get a pair of the vice grips out of the backpack and folder back out so you can actually ride. And just coasted it down the slope a little bit more until it was a little bit more open. We were off of that nasty section of trail.
Yeah.
Turned the fuel back on and I remember it started in 3 kicks.
No way.
After all that. And I was like, holy heck, I am so lucky.
Wow, that's cool.
So then we just kept going after that, and were able to get back to camp and everything, and no more crazy events there.
Yeah.
But
that's a memorable day.
That's off to the people that wait for the new guy and help them out when they.
How old were you then?
I was probably 14.
Oh man.
Maybe 15.
Okay.
When that happens, so
yeah,
still really new into all of it.
Dang. That'll leave you wide-eyed at the end of the day. Is this what it's like all the time? Oh man. Well, that's cool. So you're 30 now. You're living up here in Heber. How did you come across Power Chicken Off-Road?
So I took my bike actually to another shop that had been here in the valley and had some work done with them, because I didn't have time to get it done before a big trip I had coming up.
Mm.
And we were asking about another place that does other power sports maintenance repairs, because my family's got a bunch of other snowmobiles and they like to just have them go into the shop for regular season stuff. And life always goes, you don't have time to work on your own machines. So we're like, hey, before we're actually in the crunch, let's figure out some other places. So went from check out that, and you'll check out Power Chicken with Colin. And met him, and about that time, I just, you know, I was, we were here in the Valley. I've been here about a year, and I was like, I'm in a job, but I don't necessarily, it's not going to be a career.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always loved and been interested in power sports, and since I actually started riding dirt bikes, I wanted to, you know, I had an interest in doing that as a job, you know.
Yeah.
Just, you know, working on them and everything else. So kind of at that point, everything lined up, and my wife was really supportive of me kind of making the change, you know, job change and whatnot, and was able to get to know Colin a bit more and give me a chance, and it's been awesome. I've loved it. So
cool. How long have you been here?
So about, actually 2 years now, so.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's been awesome. We've grown a lot since then. Moved shops, upgraded things a little bit.
Cool. That's always fun to see.
Yeah.
Look back like, ah, we're getting somewhere. We're doing it.
Yes. Yes. Some days seem daunting and it's not coming, but you look back and it's like, oh, we've come a long ways, actually.
Yeah. That's a pretty satisfying feeling.
Yeah, definitely.
So what's your position here? What are you in charge of?
I kind of wear a lot of hats here.
Yeah?
I'm not definitely not like a master tech or anything like that, so do a little bit of the back, but then also do a lot of the stuff up front here with sales or service, and, you know, make sure we have parts and mm-hmm. things that way, where we're still kind of a newer shop. I'm not so a new shop, but we're not a giant shop. We're still, Colin's always wanted to kind of have that old school feel
mm-hmm.
To the shop, where it's not just a place that's about making money and making sales.
Yeah.
So with that mentality, there's a different kind of a speed or process that things go at too.
Yeah, so, that's true.
But it's, yeah, like I said, it's been great here. Been wearing a lot of different hats there.
And, yeah, and as you will with a small company. That's yeah. how it goes.
Yeah, so.
But that's cool. You're sticking with them as they grow.
And, yeah, it's been kind of fun to see things refine a little bit and be able to kind of specialize a little bit more as well.
Yeah, and for the listeners, Power Chicken Off Road is a dealership / repair shop located in Heber, Utah. And we're actually sitting here behind the counter with the dirt bikes out here, and those Rehus are looking pretty good.
Rehus are pretty, yes, they're yeah. a lot of fun.
So what do you carry here? What do you have?
So we have the Rehus. We have.
Is that how you say it? Rehu?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, so they're out of Spain. Mm-hmm. When KTM bought up the Gas name, these guys bought up the Gas factory.
Right.
And that's kind of what those motors are based off of, and they're solid.
Yeah.
So we've got that. We've got the Orion, which is kind of like your Pitster Pro GXP. It's a very similar comparison there.
Yeah.
We have Mountaintop Dealer. We have Rails and ZF Snowbike.
Yeah.
For all the snowbikers out there.
There's a lot around here.
So, yeah, and we work on all the other ones as well, so... Mm-hmm. It's been a lot of fun to see the different things there come, what people, the setups that people have come to the shop.
Yeah.
People come in, they're wanting to know about stuff, and I say, really, it's the limit is your imagination and your budget,
yep.
whatever you want to put in there, and you'd be surprised at what you can do on a small budget if you're imaginative with it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of yeah. fun.
Well, I was taking a look in the back before we started, and there was a T300 frame with a BRC 500 two-stroke in it with a snow bike kit. I imagine that bike's a riot. That thing's got to be so much fun to ride.
Yeah, no, that's just definitely a powerhouse.
Screaming up a mountain.
Yes, so we've got that that customer's bike there. We have a 23 KTM 450 with a mountaintop kit. It's got a 3 1/4 lug for the 2024s. That bike is pushing 77 horsepower with race fuel and 73 on pump, and man,
73. My goodness.
It's one of those bikes that if you hop on that, it's hard to ever think about going to something else, including a sled.
Yeah.
So.
Oh man, I've never ridden a snow bike personally. I've always wanted to, but I've just never had the opportunity to do it. They look unwieldy. Looking at them, they're like 8 or 9 feet long. Like, how do you deal with that? Like, I guess once you're flowing in the snow, it's not that big a deal. Your momentum really does you a favor, but
yeah, it's so you think about those smooth, flowy like single tracks you ride, mm-hmm. and where it just kind of just rolls.
Yeah, and you're just leaning the bike, and
yeah,
just
and so a lot of times like that's the feeling you get with your snow bike, and you can get rowdy with her too. You can do wheelies and everything else with that, and then jumps. A lot of people will go and do big jumps.
I've seen some of those giant drops people hit.
It's just a totally different game. It's not quite dirt biking. It's not snowmobiling. It's kind of this mix in between everything. And it the nature of how they work really allows you to go a lot of different places that mm-hmm. you know other snow machines don't.
Yeah.
Or can't.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that.
Play in the woods where people aren't tearing it up as much mm-hmm. other than other snow bikers.
Yeah.
Or you can get into places where because of the woods or like side hilling, you can just cut across the side hill with a single ski versus a snowmobile where you have to counterbalance the steer everything. Where you can get into those little groves that haven't been touched by anyone else and play around there and then go on to the next place.
Oh man.
So
sounds cool.
It's a pretty fun experience.
Yeah. So taking a little tangent here.
Yeah.
How long would it take to take your bike from dirt bike setup to snow bike setup?
So depending on the extent of your build, but average you're like 3 to 4 hours. So
interesting. That's better than I thought it would have been.
Yeah, where you're, cool. you're drop your swing arm and your all your rear stuff, and replace that with your snow bike kit. You mm-hmm. have a strut that attaches in where your rear shock's at. Drop your front wheel, put on
ski.
For people that are doing more heavier riding with a snow bike, a lot of times they'll do a shock swap on their forks as well.
Oh, so you can use the original shock.
So
I thought it would have been like two totally different shock setups.
You can. It's just you run the chance of bottoming it out a lot more often with your stock
right.
setup than if you go like a lot stiffer.
Yeah.
So a lot of people that are really getting aggressive or going to be more than just kind of cruising around, mm-hmm. they'll go and they'll put stiffer springs in their front shock.
Okay.
Their shock or forks, sorry.
Right. I get that. But you can use the same rear shock, or do they suggest using...
So the rear shock gets removed.
Okay, so it comes with its own in your snow bike kit.
So you can do like a solid strut. For some kits or mm-hmm. other kits that have an option for doing the most common is the TSS, which is by Timber Sled, which is basically it's its own shock system that attaches into the snow kit.
Okay.
So,
man, what would that setup cost you? Basic setup, go from a
brand new?
Yeah, from a KTM 450 to put in a I don't know, a Timber Sled basic kit.
So, you can range from, you know, $5,000 to $8,000 easily on just the kit itself.
Go buy another bike. Crying out loud.
Yeah, but the bike will still have wheels, so if you're riding in the snow.
I know.
No, but, I mean, people also spend $20,000-$30,000 on a snowmobile.
So. That's, yeah, that's true. That's my neighbor. Man.
Like I said, earlier, or your imagination and your budget, there's buying used kits. You can find those for $2,000.
Yeah, I guess so.
So you can get a used kit for $2,000 and, you know, put a thermostat and, you know, maybe some adjustments or some airbox stuff like that. So
yeah, because you have to enclose things so you don't ice up your carburetor. You got to get a carb warmer and stuff like that.
So typically, yeah, a lot of people will try to do newer bikes where they don't have the carbs or they just don't have the injection just because there can be the risk of like something freezing in mm-hmm. there or not performing as well as you'd like.
Yeah.
Last year we had a TM300 that we ran 2-stroke.
Okay.
With a rail kit for part of the season and the second half of the season with the mountaintop 129 track. And that was we had a smart car on that thing.
Yeah.
And that was actually a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Super playful 300.
It did okay. Had enough power to do what you needed to?
Yeah, on some of the steeper like hill climbs, you notice the lack of power compared to some of like the 450s.
Do you have any idea what the power loss is from crank to final drive? Because you got two sprockets in between, right? So there's coming off your front sprocket up to the top, and then it goes back down.
So you got, like, depending on your kit, like, you got like four sprockets. So you got your drive sprocket, you have your first sprocket on your track,
yeah,
and then you'll have two more down to the actual track system from up higher. So there's a lot of gearing possibilities you can go with all that. So
right.
You've got those gearing variables. You have track length. Lug height. So there's a lot of variables into how much, you know, your track rotates and how different it can go from bottle to model or even just bike to bike, depending on what the owner has it set as.
Man, the whole new science for that stuff.
Yeah, it can get pretty wild. And so some of that stuff is what we love to do here.
Yeah.
Just to get it just dialed in for people.
That's cool.
So
neat. So back to you. The last bike we left off was when you're 14, you're on your DT.
Yeah.
125? 175.
Yeah.
So what did you have after that until now?
So after that, I bought a 84 XR250R.
Nice. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I thought that was amazing. And it was a lot of fun.
40-year-old bike.
It was definitely a step up from the 175.
Yeah. Still heavy, but...
Still heavy, but I was able to get up and go a bit more.
Neat.
So,
how long did you have that for?
I had that for 2 or 3 years.
Okay. And what is it about the XR models that they're just so classic?
Classic, like, is exactly where I was thinking.
Yeah. I don't get it, but they're so attractive.
Yes. Yes. 84, that's a little bit past, at least for me now.
I was born in 84.
I'm sure you've got lots of miles and it's been an adventure.
Yeah, it's been an adventure. I've broken some things.
That's the great part about them, though, is that so many people attach those adventure and those miles with those bikes, and that's what so many people started off with. I think that's part of the love that people have.
They weren't really expensive, and they just kept going.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brought a lot of people into the sport that way.
Yeah. And so I after that, I went to an 06 CRF 450X.
Shoot.
And so the experience I had with that Honda before was a big part of why I stayed with another Honda.
Yeah.
Are
you from an 84 to an 06?
Yes.
That's a lot of technology.
I was on clouds at that point.
I bet.
This is amazing.
Yeah, suspension's a whole different deal.
Yes.
Cool.
And the gearing and everything, like, that thing just wants to go. It doesn't like low or medium. It's on that throttle.
No, that's the problem with those, even in the X. Yeah.
So,
was that in the trails?
I still had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
When I got that, I was actually living up in Montana, and I would have a 4-on-3-off schedule.
Oh, cool. So, what were you doing?
I was actually doing law enforcement.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right on.
So, it was nice to get a break away from everything. Almost 3 days off, and so. 2 out of 3 days I'd usually go and ride up someplace, explore on my own, and just get out there and put some dirt on the road. So,
yeah, that's cool.
I really love that bike, and actually still had it when I moved down here. But I started doing a lot more single tracks, more technical, harder stuff. And at that point, I set it as it was a 480. And did some work to it. And
yikes.
You bump that throttle off on a bumpy 184 and you shoot off somewhere.
Yeah. Shoot, man.
So, did hit a point where I realized that I could probably have a better setup bike for the type of trail and terrain I was riding.
Yeah.
So, at that point, I was working here when I kind of hit that recognition, and we had the TMs. In Italy, TM dirt bike.
Is that, never heard of that?
So they are kind of boutique bike. They only build, like, I think last year they only had like 3,000, a little over 3,000 bikes that they produce in a year. So they build the whole bike in house, or at least 90% of the bike that they do themselves. Aluminum frame.
So it's 2-stroke or 4-stroke?
They do both.
Okay.
Yeah. So they've been around for 50 years or so, and it's I think it's kind of like they have kind of like the same like Ferrari mentality. Like we're not going to build many of them, but what we build, we're going to build the very best we can.
Are they high end or are they just a nice built bike?
I'd say some of both. Like stock, you're going to have more power on one of the TMs than like most of your built KTMs. So
are we talking comparison to like Beta? What's are they pretty similar as far as technology and what they've got in them?
I'd say they're probably like a maybe even like a step ahead. They've been doing the throttle body fuel injection for a number of years.
Really?
Some other companies are just getting into it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a perfect bike.
None of them are.
There's any bike that ever is. So
no.
They have their quirks and different things with them, just like any other. But definitely a lot of fun.
It's just the initials TM.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm gonna have to look that up later.
So you KTMs without the K.
Right.
But so we're a dealer for them here, and so was using them and working with them quite a bit
mm-hmm.
here at the shop, and it's like that's what I want to go with.
Cool.
And so I ended up selling the Honda and getting on the 300 two-stroke TM. And it's definitely one of those bikes where like, I know it can get through whatever the terrain is in front of it. I just have to make sure I'm holding on to the handlebars mm-hmm. once it's there.
Yeah, yeah. You want to go with it.
it'll get there, but I just have to make sure I stay on.
Yeah.
It's got all the capabilities to do any sort of terrain you want.
Cool. Is that the bike you have now?
Yeah.
Yeah? Was it out here? Or is it home?
It is out there right now. It is stripped down. I was going to make it into a snow bike.
Okay.
And I haven't had time. Kind of that what we were talking about earlier mm-hmm. where you don't have time to work on your own machines. And
yeah.
So.
In my trade, my wife's been waiting for a laundry room for 4 years now. I'm too busy building everybody else's junk, so I don't have time for my own.
Yeah.
I totally get it.
So. That's one that's like I was going to do a snow kit with it, but I think I'm just going to go back to dirt.
Well, as mild as this winter has been here,
it's been funky.
Yeah,
it's been funky. So it may draw itself out. Hopefully, summer wise and water wise, that lasts a little bit longer. But
yeah,
we'll see.
That groundhog said 2 more weeks,
yeah,
so I'm counting on it. I'm going to shoot him next year.
It'd be nice to actually get some ride time this year. Last summer was a short.
Oh my goodness.
There's no, I mean, your trails were all frozen up still in the middle of summer.
Yeah, so. I think down in Payson, where I like to ride up Payson Canyon and for the alpine stuff close to me is, I think it was late June before the trails were dry enough to not tear them up, and you'd still see some snow off in the shadows and stuff. So, yeah, not typical at all.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to having an actual full summer this year, but we'll just see how wet it is.
Yeah. So you like to ride some hard enduro, medium enduro?
Yeah, medium enduro is probably more my classification. yeah.
Have you ridden much of the like hard enduro stuff down in southern Utah? Like the colored trails or Moab?
I've done some Moab. I haven't quite got to the colored trails. A lot of times when I go down there is with a lot of family and mm-hmm. younger kids with the group and everything else. And so we, get quite as much a chance to go it off on my own, where I'm the only one that really wants to go ride that in my family group there.
Yeah.
So.
You guys all have trailers and stuff you haul down there and camp out?
Yeah, that, and we'll bring like side-by-sides
yeah.
and some other bikes and stuff.
Cool.
So, done some of the stuff, usually the same trails that you can get like your side-by-sides and stuff, where I'll ride the dirt bike on that.
Yeah.
Free up a spot in the Razor for the little ones.
Perfect.
I'm not going to ever whine about that.
Yeah. Well, that's cool.
So, did that, and then, like I said, just a bunch of the trails around here, and with some of the friends or coworkers, or my wife will go out and ride with me.
Yeah. What did you pick up for her?
So, for her, we have a 17 250 SX.
Oh.
It's been set up really well for her.
Yeah. Geared a little different, I'm assuming.
Yeah, so it's actually got quite a bit. I bought that from my boss, Colin. He set it up as a hard enduro bike
mm-hmm.
for him.
And okay, so it was geared down from a race bike.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, so he did some gearing stuff, adjusted like the power valve spring so it's a lot smoother delivery.
Yeah.
We put a Clake clutch on it, or clutch lever, adjustable clutch lever.
Yeah.
And
bring it in a little closer for her. That's
so just like the weight, the pull you can adjust.
What's the brand?
Clake. They're out of Australia.
Interesting. For a Zeta, one finger, but not that one.
That's... So yeah, it's a one finger, single finger clutch, and you can either stiffen it so it's a little bit harder, you can feel the pull a little bit more.
Yeah.
Or you can just.
I'll take 2 pounds, please.
Literally, like almost like nothing to pull it.
Really?
And so
I gotta find that. I'm at 7 pounds.
Freak! I love it. Like, honestly, her progression on riding, I think, is a big part of just her determination, but also that clutch.
Yeah.
She can get out and ride and focus on the trail in front of her versus having to focus on the handlebars.
Manipulating the bike, yeah.
And working that, and it just becomes that much easier where she doesn't have to look, basically, you know, have her brain focused on the bars, and she can actually gauge the trail and the terrain out in front of her, and doesn't have that, you know, mental or physical fatigue from working the clutch like that.
Cool.
So, I love the setup's been fun. It's fun for me to hop onto and play with that.
Did you lower it a little bit for her too?
No, she's pretty tall. She's like 6'1".
6'1"?
Yeah.
How tall are you?
Not that tall.
Wow. 6'1".
Yeah. So
cool.
250 is the smallest bike we can. You know, she started with a CRF 250L is what I got for her.
Okay.
With something that's not going to jump out from under.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a good, solid, stable bike, kind of going back to the experience that I've had growing up with those
Mondas
there.
And smart.
So it was a kind of exciting day when she got to the point where she's like, this bike isn't quite geared for the stuff we're riding. It's not doing what I want it to or need it to do.
That's cool.
And she's recognized that for herself. That was just one of those, yes.
Yeah.
Fist pump, like,
yeah.
We're doing well.
She's critiquing her bike, and you're like, okay, now we're getting somewhere.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, but she's super picky on a machine that she can depend on. And so when this one popped up, we're like, yes.
Does it have e-start?
No.
It's a kick.
That's one of the things that she always reminds me of.
Yeah.
That she misses her electric start.
Yep. Yeah. But the Yamaha, there's a company called Fishmoto Fish. I don't know if it's Fishmoto, but it's Fish out of Canada. Mm-hmm. That just came up with an e-start kit for the YZ250X, or just YZs in general. Mm-hmm. I think it's like all told out the door, we're probably like $1,100 to get it put on. But after the time I had down in Dutchman Wash a couple weeks ago, four or five weeks ago, where we were riding just the nastiest, gnarliest, super tight stuff I've been in.
Man.
You can't kickstart that freaking bike. I'm doing these weird like acrobatics to try to get my foot down there, and sometimes we try to do it with our hand. So yeah, I totally get it. The kickstart is not ideal.
Yeah, so, that's once I got that CRF to the 450X and had both options.
Yeah,
You can't go back.
It's
horrible. I feel a little bit bad for my wife and having to go back to that. Thankfully, it starts up really easily.
Yeah.
But
she probably kills it a lot less than before.
Yeah. So. She's done really well with kind of that transition there. If I have the option, if I'm ever like looking at bikes, headlight, like
an e-start,
and a kickstart backup.
Yeah.
It's kind of like my first, like, criteria. You
know, that's smart
for that. And so just because there's so many times where you're out exploring or something happens on the trail and you're out, you know, after dark, and having the headlight is essential for getting back.
Yeah.
Or a battery dies and you can't use the electric start, and you have to use the backup kick, or you're on some stupid slope or tight spaces and you don't want to have to kick that thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've gotten a little pickier.
That's fine. I mean, but it's really cool though that you know, you're in the industry where whatever bike you get, you're going to be able to work on it or buy a kit to make it do whatever you want, and you have all the tools and stuff here to do it. Oh man, I'm super jealous of that.
Dude, the worst though is when you're trying to do it at home and you're like, I don't have the tools here. Yeah. I know they're at work. I know exactly where it is.
They're 2 miles away.
And it's, you're like, honey, I can't do the job here. I don't have the stuff. I got to go into work to do it. And they're like, why? You know how to do it. I was like, yes, I do, but it's not worth my time right now to do it here.
Oh, shoot, man. That's cool.
No, that's fun.
So what's your 5-year plan? Still looking to be here, growing with the company?
Yeah, that'd be my goal.
Yeah.
So,
right on.
I love being here. I can jabber bikes all day. It's great and con at the same time. it's easy to get distracted with other stuff, but I really enjoy it. And so it's definitely been a blessing to be here and to kind of have the opportunities open up, and love working with the guys that are here. And so it makes a big difference.
Yeah. So, yeah. When you enjoy your work, it's so much better. So much better. It makes everything else in your life work. So, another side tangent here.
Yeah.
Those Riehus.
Yes.
The Ranger. I was really interested in them. Me and my buddy Rob were looking at them for a bit, and there's some drawbacks, ground clearance, fork diameter, stuff like that. But have you been on them at all? Have you ridden? Mm-hmm. What are they? How do they feel compared to what you're riding?
So TM, they don't have as much power. But like I was saying before, the TMs are kind of built like your little Ferrari.
Mm-hmm.
They
compared to the TM, they don't have as much power.
Correct.
Okay.
Definitely not underpowered compared to like your other brands.
Mm-hmm.
The Ranger itself, the way it's designed is that it's got more low end torque, and power, and a smoother delivery.
Yeah.
Less top end than like the Racer, the Pro, which are their other models that they have that are more top end.
Mm-hmm.
Across the board with the Riehus, I've been surprised at how much bottom end they have.
Just lugability.
They lug pretty well.
Hmm.
With them being 2 strokes, it, like I said, it surprised me. And
E-start?
Maybe electric and kick.
Okay.
So.
That's a plus?
Yes.
Cool.
The Ranger also has all the wiring for Street Legal Kit.
Oh, neat.
So all you have to do is get the lights in there, and you're set to go that way on the Ranger.
Is the 300 the biggest one they make in the 2-stroke?
Yes.
I guess everybody does that. So.
They have a 200, 250, and a 300.
Okay. Do they make a 4?
Currently, they don't. They're coming out with some new stuff. So we'll see where they're at with that. I don't know all the details there.
Yeah.
But I'm excited because I've been pretty impressed with these bikes.
Yeah. I'd like to throw my leg over one and try one.
Yeah.
They seem cool.
We're planning on doing a demo day sometime this spring.
Oh, really?
So we did one last fall. We had about 40 people turn out to that.
Where at?
We did over at Soldier Pass.
Okay.
South Eagle Mountain.
Yep.
And it was a lot of fun.
I'll come out to that.
Yeah. We had a lot of people. So a lot of times on the paper, people are looking at the Rangers and they're like, eh, probably not. It's going to be underpowered. After the demo day, we had several people come in and buy the Rangers.
Yeah.
Because
so you benefited from that demo.
And it's just, in general, a lot of the feedback was really good. One of the common comments that we got from that is that people were very impressed with how manageable the 200 was, as far as like response and your steering and handling. They're like, I've never ridden a bike that follows my body weight or my steering as quickly as this.
It's a shorter fork, isn't it, on the 200?
I can't think of the fork length right now. So something kind of unique with like height on the Riehus is that the Ranger comes with an adjustable linkage piece.
Interesting.
Like stock.
Like the dog bone deal has different slots you can.
Yeah, so you've got. where your. My goodness, I'm pulling a blank. But so you just pull out, you pop out one bolt, take the nut off, pop out one bolt, and it's got these little kind of cap pieces, kind of sitting where that bolt goes, and you can change the location of those, how they're sitting in there, and it. Raises or lowers the shock in that system.
How much?
You got, say, maybe a couple inches.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Man.
So you can bounce it up to basically the full regular dirt bike height, or mm-hmm. you can drop it down to, inch and a half, maybe 2 inches shorter than that.
Wow.
The Ranger also has a little bit lower, shorter seat, mm-hmm. so that helps with anyone that's got shorter legs or just a smaller build. But you're still, interesting. Like, the Ranger is still a full-size, like, capable dirt bike.
Yeah.
We've gone up, I just forgot the name of the trail, but Colin took one of the 200s up Benville 200s.
Oh, really?
And he said he forgot that he was riding a 200. He's been riding on 250s and 300s all, mm-hmm. Been on them all last summer. And got to the top of the moment, and he's like, I felt like I was cheating with how well the suspension worked, and the yeah. bike just went where I wanted it and didn't have any issues. And
that's pretty cool.
So it's for those out there that want to a lot of like your single track and a manageable bike, the Rangers I think are an awesome option for them,
and they're not very expensive. They're in the same price range as the YZ. Like the YZ250X.
Yeah, you're in your mid price range categories,
yeah.
Compared to like your other dirt bikes.
Yeah, that was pretty impressive when I saw that. So there's the Ranger, which is kind of more of your enduro model, but they have a motocross model too?
Yeah, so they have the race model, and then the Pro, which is the Pro is essentially the same motor, or is the same motor as the race. But it has a bunch of upgrades on that stock. So on the Pro, you have your fan kit that's already on there. You have extra triple clamps. You've got nicer bars. You have corded forks. You have your billet wheels. You've got more engine protection, like your ignition cover and like clutch covers protection already on it.
Really?
As a stock. That's a stock Pro.
What's the price difference, do you recall?
So you're about $1,000 difference.
That's it.
The Pro and the race.
Oh, shoot. To set that up on your own, you'd be over $1,000.
Yeah, you're counting labor and different stuff like that. It's easily to $3,000 to $4,000, like with all the parts themselves and the time mm-hmm. to do everything, swapping it. So
Yeah. Wow. That's kind of cool.
Paying for your buck, if you're going to be going that route and doing that stuff anyways, that's a really cool option.
Yeah, that'd be really neat to have that just straight from the factory. Mm-hmm. What are parts availability like?
Parts aren't too bad to get either. So there's a number of different companies that there's a couple companies actually here in the U.S. that make aftermarket parts for them.
Okay.
And then Riedu also has a distributor in Texas that
for their OEM parts.
Mm-hmm. For OEM, like your plastics for that is Polysport.
Okay.
So there's, if you want, for customization or whatnot, or personalizing it, all sorts of routes you can go with that. And they have it set up kind of like Rocky, where you can jump on their website and order the parts, and they'll ship it straight to your house.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to work through a dealer or someplace else, a middleman, to get those. So
interesting. Well, it's turning my head again. Gummit. I love my Yamaha.
Another bike to the
show. There's also always those shiny things on the other side of the fence.
Yeah. We try to keep a lot of the stuff here in stock as well for replacement or mm-hmm. upgrades.
Yeah.
And so, all the shiny bedazzle stuff. It's always tempting. That's one of the hardest things about working here is your wish list never gets any shorter.
Yeah, it'd probably get worse.
Oh, my goodness. Because
You see what other people come in. They're like, I want to throw this, and this on. They're like, I should probably do something like that.
it's a challenge.
Yeah. Well, cool. This is such a cool setup, and I'm kind of bummed I haven't heard about this place before, but I'm lucky I know it now. Powered Chicken Off Road.
Yeah, thanks for coming up here.
Yeah, thanks for taking a minute to just sit and talk. It was really cool. Let you get home to your wife.
Okay, well, I appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll talk again soon.
Sounds good. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you have a story of your own that you'd like to share or like to hear on the podcast, please reach out to me on Facebook, on Instagram, or send an email to thedirtbikejournals@gmail.com. And please like, share, subscribe, write a review about the Dirt Bike Journals so that it will continue to grow. Once again, thank you for listening. See you next time.